Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to the Castorbis Podcast with a K, available on castorbis.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo. My name is Christian Corley, and with me is James McLean. Hello, James.
Hello.
How are you doing? All right?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I've got with me today, I thought in a desperate attempt to make myself seem even less manly than usual, I have my cup of coffee, which is my usual sort of branded latte. And to seem particularly Italian, even though I have no particular wish to seem particularly Italian, I've got some water as well to drink at the same time.
Right. Oh, okay. Well, that's nice. Is it any particular water? Is it fizzy water, mineral water, or just glass on top of it?
I have actually got some fizzy water downstairs. I could have done that. I didn't think about that.
It's probably best not to have fizzy drinks while we're recording a podcast, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yes, sir.
So on this week's show, we'll be talking about various things, including Matt Smith, Titan Comics, Lego, and Philip Morris has been teasing fans as well. So we'll be talking about missing episodes. I've got a slight Italian theme to this week's podcast as well.
You have?
Yeah, I brought Brian with me.
Hey.
Hey, Brian.
I'm an Italian.
Slightly.
Slightly.
Are you?
Sort of. As much as you can be for having never been to the country, you know.
Oh, it's not one of those sort of American things about who you're descended by and you pick the country that you particularly like and then say that's who you're descended from. Normally it's Ireland. But obviously Ireland was, you know, being a Doctor Who fan and going around in conventions, you're obviously quite used to being a little off the mark and a little way out there. So you went for something a little less conventional and went for Italian.
In fairness, you know, the majority of my lineage actually comes from Sicily. So I'm American, hey, but, you know, I got those Italian genes in there. So I didn't just randomly choose one. If I did, I'm not sure I would have gone there. I don't know.
Who would you gone for if you had to randomly choose?
If I had to randomly choose, well, you know, I am
Welsh.
Quite fond of the UK.
UK, got to be more specific than that. You could offend a few people there.
Oh, could I? Yes. Mm. You know what? No, I'm going to leave it at that because I'm going to come from anywhere in that area, because if I choose one, I'm sure I'm going to offend somebody else anyway. Yeah. I don't know. I have no clue. Actually, there are quite a few places I have still yet to visit in the world that I would like to claim that I am possibly from one day.
Well, that's your right as an American to do that, isn't it?
That is right.
Absolutely.
I will go to their land. I will kick them out. And say that it's my own.
No, I wasn't actually getting political there, but you did. So, good on you.
Whilst Brian decides whether he wants crude oil or olive oil, let us move on. See what I did there?
All right. Yeah.
Okay. Matt Smith has been forced to pull out of a convention in Australia, which is set to take place over the week. Over several weeks, and it's a weird kind of thing that kind of tours around. It does different major cities in Australia, and he's been forced to withdraw. It was called the Hooniverse event, and it was organised by Hub Productions. Matt said, "I'm deeply saddened to have to advise I will not be able to come to Australia for the Hub Productions Hooniverse event. Although I wish it were otherwise, due to a personal family emergency, it's not possible for me to leave England at this time. I truly regret the situation and the disappointment it must be causing, but I'm hoping to be able to reschedule as soon as possible for the future. I look forward to see you all then." Obviously, there's a lot of disappointed people in Australia. There's also, I am delighted to say, a lot of people being extremely positive about this. If the star of Doctor Who, or the last star of Doctor Who, is unable to travel to Australia, there must be a very good reason for it. And a couple of knobheads aside, fans have generally been really positive about this and realistic, which I'm delighted to see, because this may not have happened 10 years ago or so, this kind of this good reaction to this disappointing news.
You know, I'm surprised that anybody is actually well, I shouldn't be surprised, people are people, but that anybody's reacting poorly to it, considering, you know, he actually, like, rather than just saying I'm sorry I can't make it, he let you know why, and it's an extremely valid reason, you know. So I'm sad to hear that there are some people who just can't get their get past themselves.
Well, let's look past those and be a positive and hope all the best to Matt's family as well.
Yeah, it's a shame. So I'm not too familiar with this event. You said it's a traveling event?
It's not so much a traveling event. Apparently, it takes place in different cities over the course of 4 weeks, because Australia's quite a large place, as you know. But
sure,
also,
yeah.
It has that problem that you guys don't have so much now, but used to, in that most of the cities are on the coasts, around the coast, and there's not much going on in the middle.
Was he going to different cities with them, or was this like one particular city that was getting cancelled?
I think he was going to more than one.
Interesting, okay.
Yeah. It's not entirely clear. I know they got someone. I think they brought Mark Sheppard in when Karen Gillan couldn't do one of the venues. So that's what's happening with that. Basically, very sad. If you were going and have any thoughts on this, do by all means drop us a line and or leave a comment underneath this week's podcast. We've got some good comments after last week's podcast discussing the Horns of Nyman. So there's a nice little discussion going on there between, Gareth Cavan has posted a few posts in praise of the 1979 serial. I personally want to avoid getting too deep into Nyman this week.
Why not?
Happened to me last week. I had to watch it last week and then talk about it. So, but Brian, how do you feel about the Horns of Nyman?
I like it. I'm one of the ones that, like, at the first, as a matter of fact, it was one of the last classic Doctor Who episodes or stories that I'd ever seen, because I don't remember it ever having seen it when I was a kid on PBS, but I know when it got released on VHS, what's that? Am I on?
PBS station lost it.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, the PBS stations, it depended. There were so many different ones that you could watch Doctor Who on, and some of them stopped airing it or they changed the times. And it wasn't, as a kid, it wasn't something that, when it was gone, I didn't really assume that it had went to a different time. I had just assumed it was gone,
Yeah.
But it was one of the ones that was released as part of that End of the Universe box set that they did on VHS they realized we're making the move to DVD, we've got to put out all these final stories. And so it was, one of those, I forget, it was like 8 VHSs or something in there. And it was one of the last Tom Baker ones, certainly, that I'd ever seen. And I really enjoyed it. Sure, the Nyman outfits are hokey. And I forget the character's name now, but the main villain is kind of, way overacting it, but it's funny, and I liked it. And to this day, my one friend and I, whenever we see each other, and we went to high school together, but whenever we see each other, like, occasionally we'll just look at each other and shout out, "Weakling scum!" Because such a silly moment in that story, but we were cracking up the first time we saw it. But I like it. I think it's a good story. I think it's fun.
I find it quite interesting. Do you think people are more, I don't want to use the term apologetic, because accepting, that's exactly perhaps what I'm talking. Yes, okay. Now let's hide what I'm actually trying to say with something nicer. Do you think that people like yourself and that Mr. Gareth Cavanagh guy, do you think they are more apologetic, accepting of that season? I mean, if it was in a different era of Doctor Who, say slightly later on, say these occurred in Colin Baker's era or even Sylvester McCoy's era, do you think people would be quite as forgiving?
I doubt it. I think that because they were later as well, I think perhaps people were expecting a little bit more sophistication. I notice how both Brian and Gareth have got stories that involve other people watching the serial. Because Gareth's post on Casterbus describes how he showed Cage of Androzani to his flatmates when he was at university and they weren't impressed. They wanted something tacky, so he gave them Nyman and they loved it.
Weird.
But but they're not actually, I mean, I suppose what I'm trying to say is there's a certain mandate to Doctor Who now. Obviously the mandate is family and entertainment, but there could be an argument that the likes of Horns of Nyman is family entertainment in the way that the show wasn't trying to be entertaining. I mean, I don't think even Tom Baker was going for silliness. Tom Baker's just bored. And I think that's the point. I don't think he's so he's not overseeing the thing as a whole and thinking this needs to be quirky, cheesy and silly to be interesting. It's just I'm bored, how can I make this scene interesting? So what I'm sort of kind of saying is that it's fun to watch for people, but for the wrong reasons than the if you go by what the show's intent's meant to be, if you see what I mean.
Well, no, okay, yeah, I see what you're saying, and I suppose there could be a hint of that, but for me, I will say, like you suggested, if it was made in Colin Baker's era or Peter Davison's or so on, I think the story itself still stands up, and I think if it was told in their eras, it might have been told differently, slightly, but I think what I like about the story isn't just the silliness. I mean, it's a fun story. Those things, you know, made me happy to see that they could have a little bit of fun with it, but I really like the Nyman. I like what they do, and I think it's a very interesting concept within Doctor Who that they're essentially planet eaters, and once they're done with one, they manipulate somebody from another world to basically give them access to their world so that they can get there and eat that planet raw. And I loved that, and I thought that was really just fascinating to see, and I like the fact that we didn't just get to see one world within the story, we got to see two worlds even briefly, and you know, as it was, but it was great, and I loved that aspect. So I don't just like it because it's campy or cheesy. And to be honest, I think I've mentioned before, like, my favorite Tom Baker seasons are his first two and his last, because I like the more kind of serious tone in there, whereas Tom can be silly, which is what I prefer, like him to be a little silly while the stories still remain you know, a bit more straight. When you get into his later years, I love them still, because I don't think there's a Tom Baker story that I really like outright dislike. You know, I just enjoy them all. But when you get to his later years, they certainly do tend to lean more toward the silly, as this one does. But I think for some reason it just worked well in this story.
Okay, then here's another point. Then here's another one for you to say. So say you do like the concept of Nyman. Does that not, in a sense, make it more of a travesty that if the concept had actual merit, that the story failed to live up to the actual the beads of originality within the concept? Because you're right. I mean, it is an interesting concept that they offer, but it is lost, isn't it? Did they not fail by actually creating a production which actually lost really the roots of the actual story and theme itself?
You know, I can't say that they did fail. Like I said, it was an episode. It was like I said, one of his last ones that I had watched, and I don't remember walking away feeling disappointed by it. I thought it was a great concept. I thought it was a fun story, and I didn't. As a matter of fact, I was wondering for a long time why nobody brought the Nyman back is in an updated form, of course, because obviously, like, the one thing where it did get let down was the production value of the costumes. Because even for classic Doctor Who, you know, like there is a thing where we make apologies to new series fans for the costumes and so on. But in fairness, you know, you have to judge these things by the times that they were made in. And even for the times that story was made in, that outfit was a little poor, in my opinion. But it was an interesting idea nonetheless. But I always wondered why they didn't really make a comeback, because of the concept of them.
Sweet Tums was busy.
Right. But the concept of them was great, and it could work really well. And then finally, Big Finish did for Paul McGann do Seasons of Fear, which is a fantastic Nyman story. Like, they didn't bring them back. They didn't ham them up. They didn't do what Moffat's doing to the Suntarans and making them a joke, you know, because that episode could have easily made you tell a future story of the Nyman as them as jokes because of, like, the comedic undertones in the story, or overtones, however you want to look at it. But they just used the base concept, and they really did a fantastic job. And maybe they served the Nyman better in that Big Finish play than they did in the Tom Baker era. But all I know is that, you know, I have two great Nyman stories that I love to watch.
Okay.
Well, I think it's good. I mean, I make fun of it, but I'm very glad that Brian will stick up for his love of it, and the same for Gareth as well, who is quite contrary to me on these sort of things. It's nice to see him wading in with quite a firm but thought out and explained opinion. I just personally think, I still stand to what we said the other week, I still think a lot of Tom Baker's, his era is one of the only eras I think where his stories could do with the new series approach of 40 to 45 minutes. Because there's so much there where the themes are all right, but they're just played too long, or the budget's too weak, so they just stretch and float, and just mid-season stuff, just mid-era, his stuff just sort of floats away a lot of the time. Underworld, you know, Sunmakers, Horns of Nymon. There's so many you could just say that would work as a 45 minute.
It's funny you should say that, because Big Finish have put him to the 45 minute storyline rather than the 4-part adventure. And sometimes they're 2-parters like the new series, but they've essentially put his play since he's come back to the new series format. And I have to say they feel rushed and short half the time. So it's just funny. And maybe it's like you're saying that maybe some of his stories would have been benefited.
Oh yeah, not all
shorter.
Of them,
like maybe
some
maybe
of them.
For instance, you know, I see what you're saying there, but maybe instead of saying the new series format, maybe just some of them should have just been 2-parters like the Santarin experiment.
Yes, well, I think so. I think some of them.
Yeah.
Would, I mean, obviously, you wouldn't know
I can
then.
Understand that.
Looking back, I think there's a lot there that. I personally, the only way I can really judge him is the fact there's a lot of Tom Baker's middle ground stuff that bores me. I am bored, and it's only him who makes it vaguely interesting, but the rest feels like a children's show. And unfortunately, Horns of Nymon and a lot of those seasons of that season in particular, to me, is turgid rubbish. And there's even some of those that say that the leader years has a bit of it. I tried watching The Underworld again the other day, and I got halfway through episode one and realized I wasn't watching it anymore. I was off doing something else. It was running in the background. I was like, well, wait a second, wasn't I watching that? It was just boring. So
I have to agree. I find Underworld probably a bit more watchable than you, but at the same time, it is one of the least favorites and one of the last go-to ones that I go to. But for me, it's the Sunmakers that does that to me a lot.
Yeah, Sunmakers does it for me as well. Again, yeah. Good idea, good concept. If it was truncated, perhaps it would have worked better. I don't know. Anyway, I suppose we've gone on a bit too long, but I think it's interesting because it's an interesting era of Doctor Who, which everyone, especially on podcasts, generally likes to revere and say, you know, it's the most wonderful time for Doctor Who ever, really. And you actually get them on DVD and you think,
It's good also to get Brian's opinions of the things you've been speaking about in his absence.
Absolutely, absolutely. And as I said, I'm glad that Gareth wades in and sort of throws his opinion in, because it's nice to have another person who has such a contrary. I'm quite surprised, because you're bringing up episodes which, because I love, like Brian, I love the last season of Doctor Who, except maybe Megloss. And he's there promoting, you know, he doesn't particularly like, he finds it too straight, and Megloss is the one that stands out for him. So it's that whole thing that people can have such different opinions on Doctor Who, and none of them are necessarily right, bar mine's. Just, you know, nice. I can't make any apologies for the rest of you all having wrong opinions. I give you a pat on the head, like Brian here, who obviously has the right opinion, and that's good.
Okay. Nice. Before me, on sat here, I have some comics by IDW. I must confess, I didn't collect all of the IDW .2 comics. I've got a few of the early ones. I've got the entire Star Trek Next Generation crossover, and I've also what's this? There's some prints by Anthony Dry, who I think they're his murals from the... didn't realise I had these. Yeah, some Doctor Who prints by Anthony Dry, which no one else is having. But aside from that, I've got some Doctor Who comics by IDW, but IDW no longer have the licence for Doctor Who comics. That is now held by Titan, a British company.
Ha!
Yes. They're basically given us a sneak preview recently of the new 10th and 11th Doctor series that they're running. I don't know if they're running any other Doctor Who series, but they're doing a series of comics for the 10th Doctor and for the 11th Doctor. So that should go down well with fans of those two incarnations of the Time Lord. Speaking of the most recent Doctor, I saw him in an old episode of Midsummer Murders last night. He was very good.
Really?
Capaldi, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So Titan have a problem though. They're British and IDW are American. So IDW's distribution was basically reliant on them shipping copies to stores like Forbidden Planet and other outlets that deal with imports. The distribution arrangement for Doctor Who comics is slightly complicated in that only Doctor Who magazine is able to distribute Doctor Who comics in the UK, which means it seems that Titan will have to ship their comics to the United States and then ship them back to the UK.
Wow, that's ridiculous.
This is insane, isn't it? It's balmy. Now, there was talk of Titan buying .2 magazine as well, which would obviously get them around that little problem, but no one's talking about that, basically. BBC Worldwide have denied it a couple of times. So that doesn't sound like it's going to be happening anytime soon, certainly. No, there's been some reorganising at Panini, but that's been going on for a while, so one would expect that to have completed by now. So the future of Doctor Who comics for us in the UK is going to be a case of paying... They're going to be dearer than they were, by the sounds of things, because there's going to be shipping out to the US and then shipping back.
Or you could sort of do as I did and sort of go for the sort of ebook ones. And
well, that's the other thing. The other alternative has got to be using the Comixology app on your iPad, Android or Windows tablet and buying your comics that way.
Well, I downloaded the Forgotten on Kindle, which was a very small amount of money, hence the reason I bought it. Otherwise, yeah. I wouldn't have bothered. And it was fine. And in a sense, you know, I know we all sound newfangled and techno praising, but, you know, I find the comic medium on an app, on a Kindle or on an Android or an iPhone, whatever, a far better way to read comics, because it's the problem with comics, especially these days, where there's a hell of a lot of splashing, where basically... Yeah, yeah. People don't understand, rather than say back in the 80s where comics, you know, would have at least a good 8 to 9 frames per page. Come the 90s where the art vogue started to hit in, doing large impressive splashes, be they Simon Bisley, Jim Lee, whoever you want to do, became the new thing. So suddenly you're able to get through a comic within a couple of minutes because you were just flicking through pictures.
Yeah.
But when you've got it on an app which will actually focus on the frames more, it does slow down your pacing. And you actually get to enjoy them more like a book than you would a comic in some way. So I think it's a good mode for comics. And I think it's a good mode for Doctor Who comics as well. The Forgotten was really enjoyable. It's very cheap. And it's quite a big six comics, I think it was.
So, I have to actually consider that myself because I've been trying to get back into the Spider-Man comics, but picking up on the ones that I've missed. And it's just like one of the things is, I read them, I occasionally go back to them, but I read them for the most part like once, and then they just pile up. So an app would be ideal, just because there would be no excess and waste. I don't know. I don't generally keep them or feel a need to keep them lying around and so on. I don't know. So I think the apps would be quite an ideal situation. I should try that.
I stumbled across an Alan Quatermain comic, an issue zero on the Comixology app, just this morning when I was setting up my new Windows tablet, and it was really, really good, really good. And it was only first episode. It's an episode zero, you know, an issue zero, so they give them away free. It's not really, you know, it's not like the main part of the story because they're giving it away, but you get that and you get to get a flavor of what's going on. It was really good, and I could quite easily sit here and while speaking to you guys, be reading one of those comics on the Comixology app.
Is that what you're doing right now?
It is not what I'm doing.
Is that what you're trying to tell us?
No, that's not what I'm trying to tell you at all. No. But, you know, I could just pick it up at any time and do it and then just put it back down again. You know, it's so easy to do in that
form. Especially when you get past into your 30s and you don't really have room for stacks of comics everywhere.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. My comic collection basically is the UK version of Transformers with a few imports. And Generation 2 and a little bit of the one that came after that, and they're all in the loft. I can't store them in my office anywhere.
Yeah, same. My stuff from the 90s sits in the garage, but these days, yes, I know these days I either get stuff from the library or as I say on the Kindle. There's a different way. It's a different way of approaching these sort of things, but I'm quite pleased to see how the Doctor Who is actually slipping quite nicely into the ebook generation, not just in the comics but obviously the books as well, a lot of the out of print stuff.
Mm.
Sliding in there, which I think is wonderful.
Speaking of the out of print stuff, I received the Shakedown Monster, Prisoner of the Daleks, Sting of the Zygons, Corpse Mark of Sands of Time, Scales of Injustice, Touched by an Angel, and Illegal Alien last week from BBC Books. And that's the new range of the Monster Collection range of books that are coming out this year. These are the repackaged BBC and Virgin books.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad they're getting a repackage because, I mean, I'm still reading Byzantium off now and then. I've not been reading it properly. And it's because you do feel the different era, and you will, obviously, if you read Sands of Time and the like, there is a feeling of a different approach to Doctor Who that is interesting in the sense that it's not quite true as it is these days, to the, because they're obviously trying, they didn't have a show anymore, so they were trying to advance it. And you get Ian or Vicky saying things that you wouldn't actually expect them to say on television.
Bollocks, it, Doctor!
Yes, it's that sort of feel. You know, Ian trying to be a little bit of a suave, sexy thing, you know, and it's like, well, no, Ian doesn't do that sort of thing, especially not without Barbara around. But it's interesting because, again, it's an art form, isn't it? And it's history, and it's about seeing how Doctor Who changes, as we say, between Hinchcliffe and Graham Williams is a massive change in focus. And the same with New Adventures to McCoy or, you know, McGann. It's all good stuff. So I'm glad from a historical point of view that fans now can actually go and touch these old eras and see how they played around with the concept and did different things.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Brian, how's your Doctor Who toy collection these days?
You know, the toy collection, I kind of put on hold for a few reasons. Kind of the same thing, like we were saying with the comic books. It's starting to get to the point where I have too much and where the heck to put them. And, here's the thing with my toy collection. I'll start this way. I never wanted to collect them. Okay, I honestly didn't want to collect them. When I was a kid, I wished there were Doctor Who toys, right? And I just didn't want to collect them. I just knew if I started collecting them that it was going to become this habit, and like some kind of drug addict, I would be jonesing for the next toy. But I had this girlfriend at the time who gifted me a box of them, and that was basically like giving crack to a recovering alcohol addict. Excuse me. You know, seriously,
giving crack to recovering alcoholic. Yeah, right. What the hell do I want this for?
Well,
is it got whiskey in it?
Start somewhere, I guess, right? but no, so basically, you know, that's what happened. I was given that, and then I went nuts going, well, I've got two of the Doctors now. I've got to get more. And and so I enjoy them. I think they're great, and I think they look fantastic. And I think, like, in order to complete the set of all the Doctors, I'm going to have to buy the War Doctor figure, especially since he does look good. But that's all I've been doing, like picking up a random figure here or there. Aside from that, they're in boxes right now because I decided I'm spending far too much money on these toys. I'd rather spend it on other things, such as my prop collection, which is more meaningful to me, takes up less space, and is more impressive, I think, when you look at them on the shelf. So toy collection's fun. I am still slowly adding to it just little pieces that I think I need to have, and debating whether or not I should get rid of about half of it to various people.
Did you ever get any who may want it. Pieces?
I didn't. They're neat. They're fun, but I didn't get them. I haven't even seen one in person. I've just seen the pictures online, but yeah, they do look fun.
Okay. Well, I mean, that brings us to Lego, which was quite a nice little chat there, I thought, as well. I've been practicing, as you can probably tell, dear listener.
That was good, yeah.
Yeah. And basically this thing popped up on the Lego Kuso website, I think that's how you pronounce it, last week, which Gareth gave us a heads up on. And then every other Doctor Who website who is friends of Gareth also spotted it. And then they've all gone off with it. And we've kind of said, oh, let's hold on a minute and just see what happens with this, because this might mean something or it might not. So... basically, they have a page which says license conflicts and resolutions, and it's headed, sometimes we have to turn down project submissions that refer to specific brands or licensed properties. We do this to avoid getting your hopes up for something we know we aren't able to make. Emphasis mine. In these cases, we already know the Lego group can't secure licensing rights to produce construction toys based on a particular brand or property due to a conflicting interest with a third party. If such conflict goes away, we'll then be able to accept projects based on a particular brand or license. As of February 2014, resolved past licensing conflicts, we now welcome projects based on the following licenses that used to have conflicts: Doctor Who, which would indicate that character no longer has the license to create their character building range for Doctor Who. So what Lego are now doing is basically crowdsourcing ideas. There'll be a link in the show notes for this, dear listener, if you want to get in touch with Lego. And you can just follow it from there. So basically what they do is quite often, apparently, they crowdsource ideas for what people want. Best, like TARDIS playset, or, you know, Dalek mothership playset, or maybe Gallifrey during the Time War, that kind of thing. And then the most people who suggest or vote for a particular thing, that's what they'll then develop into a set. So it does sound as though this is quite positive for Dot 2 fans. But as I say, at the moment, we don't know the full facts at the moment, so we can't really say whether it's this or that. But it does sound promising. Lego Doctor Who would be pretty awesome. Proper Lego, proper Doctor Who Lego on the shelf.
Yeah, I think there'd be a lot of happy people about that. I mean, yeah. The character building sets, if I'm honest, probably will have a better character representation of the figures themselves, because they can do specific sculpts for the heads and so on. But, you know, for all the people out there that have things like, let's say, a Lego Millennium Falcon, that they might want to have a little Lego TARDIS and Doctor right next to, I think that would be a lot more fun.
I don't get this. This is really beginning to piss me off. Yes, it is. It really is beginning to upset me. Because Lego to me, the beauty of Lego was is that it was a form of self-building original material, or even replicating fictitious material within the brand. And enjoying the versatility of that. Now, I like to make this very clear. Lego is not a versatile beast. It is made of very simple. It's like Minecraft. It's not. There's no versatility in there. What you make does not look like the thing you want it to be. At the time when I was a kid, there was not much around that looked anything like you wanted it to be. So, you know, Lego Cowboys or Lego Space, it was its own brand. It was its own thing. As soon as it tries to take from other brands, which it can't actually look like because it doesn't look like it, because it's made out of bricks and transparent pieces of cylinders and stuff. It just really annoys me because people go, oh, look, isn't that, look, it's a Lego TARDIS. And say, well, yeah, OK, right, fine. I'll go and find some lollipop sticks and make a TARDIS for you. And you better be impressed by it, because in the end, it won't look anything like it, just like a Lego TARDIS doesn't. I don't understand it. I don't understand it with the Star Wars. I don't understand where it's got this massive following. I mean, I love Lego in itself. I mean, as I said, I had many years of enjoying it as a kid. And I used to enjoy the Space brand. Did you remember the Space brand when it came out?
Yeah, I sold all of mine for about the same amount as they were bought for in order to raise money for my wedding.
Well, there you go. That's where Lego has obviously its benefits. But, you know, now it's, I don't understand. It's like I was looking through the Forbidden Planet online yesterday, and they've got, you know, the old, very old 70s Star Wars figures we used to have.
Yeah.
They're now selling those in large size. So they're called retro large versions of those figures. So they look identical, you know, crap, but bigger. So you can see how crap they look. And they've got a whole range, you know, like, I don't can't remember how much they were, 20 to 30 quid or something. And it's just like, you know, why? Who's buying this? I don't understand who buys these, you get these busts of like Han Solo or of some like Admiral Akbar, and it'll be a bust of them and it'll be like £300. And you think, who's buying this?
I should go to school with a lad who looked like an Admiral Akbar.
The thing you have to understand, though, is about collectors.
Yes,
there are people who will collect, like, hey, I like the Doctor Who action figures, I'm going to collect the Doctor Who action figures, and they're done. But then there are people that go, wow, there's Doctor Who Legos, there's Doctor Who character builder sets, there's Doctor Who figurines from a magazine collection, there's Doctor Who hand puppets and sock puppets and hats and t-shirts and whatever, and they want it all. And I see, I'm on a lot of these boards where a lot of the collectors just always show their stuff and so on, and it's one of the other reasons why I kind of realized me collecting the toys was just kind of like, I really don't need this. It's, you look at these people's rooms in their houses, and some of the stuff they have is really neat and really impressive, but it's lost in a sea of things like, you know, Doctor Who Pez dispenser, you know, Doctor Who straws for your Doctor Who sippy cups, you know, and there are just people that go overboard because they love that franchise so much. Maybe it's their life. Who knows? They'll buy anything. And people like Lego, of course, realize that. So, of course, they want the Star Wars brand because they know they can make a mint off of the Star Wars stuff. And they want to do the same with Doctor Who. But at the same time, I will say, like, you know, occasionally some of them make a hit rather than a miss. For instance, the Star Wars Lego Millennium Falcon is actually a hit. That's actually a really, if I had that when I was a kid, my Legos would have been 1,000 times cooler. You know, but I mean, it's just the way people are built. Like, you're going to collect the Doctor Who aspects that you're going to collect that are good to you, and so am I, and so is Christian, and so are all the other fans out there. And some of them just, they collect it all. And that's what these people realize, that there will be someone to buy it. And I agree with you, because there are too many things that I have seen that made me go, is that necessary? Did that need to be made? And unfortunately, people who know that you're into that franchise will buy that for you and think that they've just done the best thing in your life. So then you then have a shelf full of, I don't know, Doctor Who tube socks, or, you know, Doctor Who sunglasses, things that you just don't need. So I'm with you, but at the same time, there is a market, and at the same time, some of the stuff is actually fun.
But it's a funny thing, because the Lego thing gets me in the grounds that by putting it, when Lego was its own world, the Lego spaceships, for instance, didn't look crap because there's no basis of comparison. As soon as Lego is trying to do like the Millennium Falcon, and I'm just looking at it online, and you can say, well, that's an impressive build. Although someone has actually done a far better version.
Someone did. Oh my god! Yeah.
Yeah. But it you start to see the limitations within the Lego, because it starts to look crap. Lego's done a very clever thing though, by sort of running it through into a brand, into a franchise brand with a sense of humour. It's sort of managed to get past that by creating its own little world, which was a very deft move. But as such, as a kid, I don't know whether I would want the Lego Millennium Falcon when you'd have toy versions of the Millennium Falcon, which actually look like the Millennium Falcon.
Do you know why I, as a kid, would have loved a Millennium Falcon Lego set?
Why is that?
Because when I was a kid, I would take all the Lego sets that I had, and I made spaceships. I didn't make the spaceships that they had, which is another thing that made Legos great, and I understand this goes toward your argument of why they shouldn't do brand stuff. You could take the Lego sets, and rather than build what was on their sheet of paper, how they told you how to build it, you could put like five of them together and you could make a brand new spaceship that didn't exist. What I always used to do was I used to build spaceships that didn't exist, but I would build them purposefully so that they could break away. Now, granted, I know Legos are meant to break away, but I built them with certain sections that were able to break away rather easily, because I loved to crash the spaceships and have the characters have to spend like an age and a day fixing their ship while the bad guys were on their tail. You know, it made me feel like I was playing Star Wars, like when they're hiding in the space slug in Empire Strikes Back and they're trying to fix the ship. You know what I mean? Like, I loved that stuff. So having a Lego Millennium Falcon would have given me the ability that the regular Kenner Millennium Falcon didn't have, which was I could crash the heck out of it and rebuild it, and it would still look like exactly what it's supposed to, you know?
That's true.
And that, to me, that fun aspect, I loved that sort of aspect of it.
Did you ever use your Millennium Falcon landing gear, your Kenner one, or Palitoy one if you're in the UK, as a handle when you flew it around?
Yeah.
Only because they had the clever advert which made people realise you could do that.
We didn't watch ITV.
Oh, well, I can tell you the advert had that sort of...
Right, okay. I'm surprised you watched ITV listening to your accent.
Well, yes, absolutely. Well, we didn't technically watch it. It was more of a thing where, you know, when Mama and Papa weren't looking, I would slip down to the servants' quarters.
And, where they're watching Coronation Street and Kitchen Sink Dramas.
They called it Corrie. I didn't know what it was for a while until I managed to marry up the images with that they had in their you see it, say, upstairs. I didn't know anything about it because we got the Radio Times, but downstairs in the basement they got the TV Times, and that had all the things. I married up Corrie to Coronation Street and everything, but it was a funny old world there. It's a fascinating concept. Anyway, it's a fascinating conversation, because as I say, I was looking through and there's just so much stuff there, and so much, you know, to me, considered crap. And the ones that fascinate me is not so much the toys or the figures like you get. I can understand why people collect those, but the ones that I get are the thing I find funny, the things which are meant for your living room. You know, they're sort of like mantelpiece busts of.
Oh yeah, no, I agree.
And you think who would spend £300 on that? It does not look cool. You can't make it look stylish. It looks so tacky. I mean, I bought one for one of the servants once, but even he threw it.
Yeah, I've seen busts of like Harrison Ford or David Tennant or the Terminator, you know, and like they always just look really freaky to me, you know. And I've seen them, like, they'll get a costume of, say, the Terminator, and they'll make this Arnold Schwarzenegger head that they can put on a mannequin. This way they can display it. But, you know, the mannequin is your regular standard size mannequin, where Arnold Schwarzenegger is built like a brick house, you know? And so, like, it always looks wrong. But I couldn't, like, I thought maybe one day I would put my tenant suit on a tailor's mannequin, but those things don't have heads or arms, and it looks like the way clothes are supposed to be displayed. You know, I can't see having a head or a bust of someone in your home. It just seems weird to me. But some people like it.
Is that it's essentially 3D printing, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Very basic 3D
printing. Very basic 3D printing, yeah.
Yeah. Just going back to what you're saying about not using the instructions, I used to, when I got sick of the instructions, I would turn the box over and use the photos on the box for the alternative builds and work out how to do them.
Oh, nice, yeah.
You always got some interesting stuff there.
It's a fascinating evolution from what we had as kids to the way that it's been carefully branded and marketed to work within a new sort of new parameters, where Lego is, you know, is as much about brands as it is about the actual basic originality of construction.
Just going back to what you were saying as well at the beginning, when you were sounding off about Lego, I took the twins to the Metro Center a couple of weeks ago, which is quite a northern thing to do, and there's a new Lego store open there. So normally they play with Duplo, but we were sat in there, Bruce and I, and played with, they basically have lots of troughs of Lego for the children to play with whilst their parents wander around and think to themselves, £100 for that? Mm. And so Bruce is playing with the standard Lego, and he was just playing and building and stuff. He had no instructions. He had no guides, no pictures to go by or anything. Just like, he was just building stuff up as you do with Lego. And in many ways, I can completely, not completely agree, but certainly highly sympathise and almost agree with what you were saying, James.
Well, I can get it as well. I think what probably niggles me is the sense that it's not, I mean, as I say, I love Lego and I think it's a great toy. I think what props niggles me is that they've been very smart, and in a sense I respect it from a sort of merchandising capitalistic point of view, in the way that they've managed to turn it into a bigger brand than just a toy. And yet in some ways it sort of irritates me a little, because it seems like a very lazy way of adapting Lego to the new world. But it's probably why Lego will continue to exist for the next 20 to 30 years. So from their own point of view, very deft and smart. Just from some watching and now suddenly seeing all it seems to be about is doing these versions of the ships, which don't look very good to me, because they can't in the end. And that sort of kind of frustrates me a little. I don't know. It's a brand new world, isn't it? I actually went the week before, I was in a school for a couple of days, dealing with kids. I know it's the sort of thing you do in schools. And what fascinated me was that we talked about Star Wars. And kids being kids, you know, when one wants a drawing of Darth Vader, they all want drawings of Darth Vaders. You know, the originality in kids is obviously very sparkling. And so I had to end up, at the end of the day, I ended up doing about 20 pictures of Darth Vader. And I sort of asked them, what was their favourite Star Wars film? And they said...
Empire Strikes Back.
No, they hated, they found the old ones boring.
Right.
They liked the new ones, and their favourite character was Anakin Skywalker. Now, that's sort of, in a sense... really threw me. It threw me across the room. I knocked over a few things, rolled across the paints, smacked into the Lego, gave it a good bashing before falling out the window. I was just stunned, because the story of Anakin Skywalker as a hero is so much darker than the Luke Skywalker story, which is obviously, there's intentionally very strong parallels between two people. One goes left, one goes right, one's acted well, one's acted badly. But they the fact that they all focused on the Anakin Skywalker as their hero, given that, you know, even when you, especially when you've got things like the Clone Wars, which builds him up to being this really big, you know, hero in that, and then you have Revenge of the Sith, where he eventually gets cut into small pieces and left to burn before turning into Darth Vader. It's very interesting that to them would be their hero. Do you know what I mean? Because it's such a, you know, almost it's a tragedy story, while the Luke Skywalker is the opposite. And for that to be their focus,
it's like rooting
on Star
for
Wars,
Macbeth, isn't it?
It is, and that to me was very fascinating. And I didn't know whether that sort of told me something about a difference in the way that children see things to how we would see things, because I can't think of any story where we would carry that sort of fascination or hero worship for a character who fails and
master.
But kids don't particularly like the Master. You didn't see a sort of flurry of ionic columns being stolen, you know, from Greece or whatever. You know, there was no massive. I haven't seen the Master Lego set yet. You know what I mean? He's not got that. Not yet. But there's not really that sort of. I mean, Blake Seven's the nearest thing I can think of as a kid where you might sort of really love the story. But then I don't think you particularly like the ending. But I don't know. Maybe you'd still like the story. But it's just very interesting. It's a very different. They see things in a very different a different world, and yet at the same time they're sharing the same thing as we do, like Doctor Who and Star Wars and Lego.
This makes me sad because my brother told me one time that he made the decision that when he shows my nephew Star Wars for the first time, he's going to start with the new trilogy. And yeah, I cried inside when I heard that. You know, we grew up with Star Wars. We adored it. And Star Wars, I mean, like, that was his thing. Like what Doctor Who is to me was Star Wars to him, you know. And not to say I don't love Star Wars, but that was his obsession. And to know that he's going to start his kid on the new ones, just, wow, that's sad.
I think
that it's so sad.
I think it's indicative of how stupid people are, because... So, you know, having things running in continuity does not necessarily make for the best dramatic effect. No. And if you run the first three first and then the next three, I don't think it gives enough layers to the original three to justify that route.
Because and it'll make the continuity issues look like they belonged. Or, yeah. Like the original three movies are the ones that made the issues.
Yes.
It's going to make kids like not if kids already found them slower paced, like you were saying in school, once they start to understand that kind of aspect of films, they're going to sit there and go, wow, couldn't they get this crap right? I mean, they got everything wrong here. You know, Darth Vader doesn't even recognize C-3PO, you know, like, it's so sad.
I mean, the only thing that the new ones give the old ones, I know we're going way off tangent here, is that it does show how crap a Jedi Luke was. Because, you know, in the old ones, when we watched them, Luke was actually as good as Darth Vader in a lot of ways. But when you watch them in the light of the new ones and you realize that Darth Vader is virtually like a crippled man, really, crippled Jedi, crippled Sith, whatever you want to call him. And Luke is someone who's learned very little. Their fights look quite slow and crap because they are both slow and crap. He's not a very good Jedi because he hasn't learned much. And he's like a not very good Jedi attacking a disabled person, really. Okay, that disabled person may have sort of blown up a few worlds and might not be the nicest sort of guy, but you know, it's that sort of level. It's he's not attacking the, you know, like Darth Maul, who would have probably cut him in two in a couple of seconds, because that was what Jedi and Sith were like in that time. But now, in the old time, they're, you know, Darth Vader is heavily crippled with a life support system stuck on the front, which always struck me as being particularly odd, especially because I did notice, actually, in Revenge of the Sith, Darth Vader actually crosses his arms when he stands like this, which is Hayden obviously not really looking to see how David Prowse used to stand, which to me seemed a bit stupid because you've got your life support system and your buttons on your front. And if you must be a few times he accidentally switched himself off, which explains why in the old trilogy... He doesn't do it anymore because he's learned that you cross your arms, you're going to switch off your power. And that can be very embarrassing in moments when you're trying to arguing it out with Grand Moff Tarkin or interrogating Princess Leia. How many rebel spies has escaped because he crossed his arms at the wrong moment, switched himself off, they pelted down the corridor. You've got to think of these things. It's the way that we see things now. What was that show that we used to talk about?
Doctor Who.
How is it?
Well, a few of those are missing as well.
Are they really?
They are. Did you know?
No, wow, I didn't. I'm so glad that your segue isn't missing, though.
Man.
Philip Morris is the man who's credited as finding these lost episodes of Doctor Who. He cleverly set up an organisation that had the same name as a previous organisation that was affiliated to a British intelligence organisation. We will go no further into that story today.
Right, okay.
And he's been talking to Radio Times recently. Now, last time we were talking about Marco Polo, weren't we? And the possibility that it has been found, but we're just waiting for an announcement to confirm this. Says Mr. Morris, who is a Scouser, but I'm not going to do his accent. These films were the last survivors of two classic Patrick Troughton tales about, he's talking about Web of Fear and Enemy of the World, which should have been destroyed years ago according to contract. The Nigerian program purchaser informed him, we had instructions to burn them, and he said,
I told him it was not necessary and the BBC would be delighted to have them back. And he also talked about some other things, such as Sky at Night and Dad's Army, and says that they work in South America, Southeast Asia, and other places. And we're also working with lots of private film collectors around the globe, transferring lots of old domestic video recordings from reel-to-reel tapes, Sheboygan and Philips 1500-1700. Now, he goes on and basically says there's a little bit more. To the fans, never give up hope. Be patient. People are working very hard in lots of very volatile and dangerous corners of the globe, sometimes paying with their nervous systems, which is a hard thing to give.
Expect, that's a fact.
Yeah. Expect the unexpected. Now, whether that means we're getting missing Doctor Who or missing episodes of Terrorhawks, I'm not entirely sure.
Well, it does sort of suggest, since we've all been saying that we expect a large catalogue of Doctor Who, we should expect nothing.
Yes.
Brian, I'm sorry.
You have been absent for a few weeks. You don't know that we've been talking about Marco Polo and the fact that someone associated with the original production has been informed that the episodes have been retrieved.
Aha.
We aren't allowed to name names. So how do you feel about this? From Mr. Morris.
If it's found, I feel obviously fantastic. Any found episode is good with me. I don't care which ones are found, so long as they are found. I will say, how slow are the people of Nigeria? I mean, thankfully, we have orders to burn this. Yeah, you did. Like, what, 30 years ago? And you're just doing it now? You know, come on. But anyway, thank God they're that slow, because there's something to be found. So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm always excited. And I think, you know, I think the fact that some of the actors and some of the people concerned with the show have commented that they recorded commentaries and, you know, that we're getting word that, you know, people were informed of their return that are people who worked on the show. I think that's very encouraging that we're going to see at least more than one story, if not fully complete, at least more than one episode from one story will be returned in some way. And I think it's a very encouraging sign. So that makes me very happy. And, you know, I'm very much looking forward to any announcements on the matter.
Well, that's good news.
I just sounded like a politician right there.
You did, didn't you?
Yeah. I just made an official statement. You guys, you can put that in the pop-out quotes on the page now.
I am going to. Look out for that, dear reader, listener. So that's Philip Morris teasing. And that brings us... Do you know, I'm just going to go back to merchandise for a moment, because I've got my latest Doctor Who figurine collection pieces through last week. Among them are Omega from The Three Doctors. I don't know whether we'll get the other Omega. And a Cyberman. No, it wasn't a Cyber Cyberman anyway. It was a Nightmare in Silver Cyberman. Beg your pardon, I put him next to a Cyberman and got confused. But what also came was the Dalek Emperor from Bad Wolf, The Parting of the Ways.
Ah, nice.
Specifically from The Parting of the Ways. And it's an interesting construct. It doesn't quite... I mean, it looks right, but I don't know whether it's the size or what, but it doesn't quite look right, if you know what I mean. It's like, it looks... Did you see the photo, Brian?
I haven't, no. I
haven't seen the photo. I thought... I put it on Twitter. I meant to send it to you as well. So he's I'm happy enough with him, and he's, you know, he's the right shape and everything, but he's kind of... remember how the old Fourth Doctor toy from the 1970s didn't fit into the police box?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's that nice kind of wrongness about it. I'm not entirely certain why it's wrong. It just isn't quite right. It's obviously, it's not to scale with the rest of the pieces either. So, you know, it's not kind of taking up my entire desk, which is kind of a bit of a shame, but I can get over that. but I'm not entirely sure what's not quite right about it. But, it, I mean, it does the job.
You know, for instance, for the regular character options toys, I wanted that one to complete my Dalek collection. A full-scale one would have been ridiculous, but a half-scale one would have been perfectly acceptable to me.
Did you ever get the feeling that he was kind of a Dalek who got too big?
When you say too big, I don't think you mean mentally. I think you mean obesity.
It's clearly a Dalek who's got too big, wasn't he? But no, like his actual construction, because you know you've got those kind of arm things behind the etheric beam locator pieces that look like they might pull in, and then he turns into a giant moving Dalek, as opposed to what appears to be in the episodes a Dalek who has had a ship built around him.
Yeah, that was the one thing with the construction. Because I will say I loved the construction of him. I loved the design of it. But I did think that on the massive scale, they made the Dalek inside way too big. And that was something from the very first season that I had thought. So I that's the only element that I didn't like about it, which is why I thought if they had released like a half-scaled version, it would actually work better and still look just as nice. I mean, I get they want the Emperor to be bigger. That's fine. But, you know. I kind of get a sense that, you know, when the captain goes down with the sinking ship, I think the Emperor has no choice, because where the heck can he go in that thing? Yeah. You know, they kind of made him a little too big, a little too planted where he was.
Okay, recommendations time. I think it's probably only fair that Brian goes first, as he hasn't been here for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks.
Especially since he hates going first.
And that, and we won't mention that he hasn't been here for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks again today.
It's funny you should mention that, because the odd thing is I haven't been here for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks.
Haven't
you?
You
noticed that? You guys didn't even notice. I've been gone and you didn't notice. All right. My recommendation. I have a recommendation, and I guess a teaser recommendation. for sure, my recommendation this week is going to be Dark Eyes 2.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody else here has listened to it, but
no.
It was great. I really enjoy listening to the Paul McGann plays, as you know, but it was a great tale. It was very interestingly told, because at first, after the first episode, you're kind of like wondering what the heck is going on here. And you kind of obviously put together what they're trying to do, but it was neat. It was fun. And I think if I had, and I really hate to say this, I really do, because I really don't want to name check somebody bad, but I think if I had one minor niggle, it would be the fact that the Master was the actor who played the Master. I know he did a Seventh Doctor story. I don't think he quite has a grasp on who the character is, unfortunately, but it works. It works fine. It's okay. I just think that was the only part where I felt a little disappointed with the story. But otherwise, it's a big success. Nice follow up to Dark Eyes, and it's kind of setting up the path for Dark Eyes 3. I highly recommend that. Right?
Really?
I know. You wouldn't expect it. But no. No, but I mean, like, Dark Eyes 1 kind of ended. Like, you knew they were going to do another one, but it kind of had ended, and you were trying to figure out how is the Doctor and Molly going to, you know, find... How are they going to find each other again? And you knew that they were going to do it. You knew they were going to resolve it, but this one kind of left you with a complete, obvious setup for the next one.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I was really hoping they weren't going to leave things open-ended for the third one, which they really didn't. They just kind of gave you the out, I guess, for it, which I liked. But yeah, no, totally highly recommend that. Paul McGann was on top form, and as was everybody actually in there. It was good. My teaser recommendation is that BBC America have very kindly given me a preview copy of The Time of the Doctor, which I have not seen since it aired, and we'll see how I feel on a second viewing of it, but it's a little light on features. It's got three bonus features, so I'm going to see what those are like and give you my thoughts on those next week, I think.
Okay, cool. James, would you like to do your recommendation for sure?
I'm in the middle of things at the moment, so they're a bit odd. I mean, I've started Doctor Who The Dark Planet, which is the Big Finish's Lost Stories, with Maureen O'Brien and William Russell, and you know, first part, it's okay. I can't say it's really drawn me in, which is why I've not gone back to it. But I will hold judgment until I've obviously had the rest. To parallel Brian's DVD release, I've been reading that came out a couple of days ago on Kindle was The Tales of Trenzalore, which is four stories based on the ridiculous amount of hundreds of years, 900 years that the Doctor spends on Trenzalore protecting it from a convoluted story that no one really cares about by the time it aired. They sort of got past that after series five, but never mind. We finally found out what was going on, or what was made up to have gone on.
Well, it was all made up, let's face it.
Oh, I hope so. I've got 50% way through it, two of the stories. It's okay. The stories are quite light affairs. It's on Kindle. It's fairly cheap. It's a nice idea. I like the idea that if you're going to waste 900 years of the Doctor's life on one simple story, you might as well try and start using that time and telling some stories within it. Because it does feel, I mean, me and my friend were saying this, that in the end, I still kind of feel that if it had been like 90 years or 100 years, that would have done its job. As how long he was on there. 900 just seems extremely indulgent again. You know, Moffat just seems to like throwing off hundreds of years, mm-hmm. which I think can be a problem, because as people, the Doctor feels very human, doesn't he? He has a human sort of, he is the human archetype in a lot of ways. He's the compassionate anti-establishment human more than an alien. And so to sort of take him out for 900 years is just a bit too long, I think, for the average audience to really comprehend, or for it to really mean anything.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't change, really, does he? Between when you see him at the beginning to the end, it could have been 90 days, not 900 years. So it's a nice way of trying to bridge that ridiculous gap. There's some stuff I didn't realise. Maybe I missed it in Time of the Doctor. I didn't realise he had a wooden leg.
Yes.
Was that in there? Because yes. I must have missed that. That was in there.
Well, apparently, I missed that.
Yeah, that was
in yes, there. Yes, apparently it's a wooden leg, which is why he walks. I thought it was just a gammy leg, but it's and that's referenced.
Wow. You know what? I remembered hearing people say that he loses a leg before the episode had aired. That was one of the rumors going around. But since we never actually saw the moment, I never gave any thought to his limp. I had just assumed that he had a limp, you know.
Well, I'm not sure whether that's covered in the next last two stories. It's not covered in the first two, although in one of the two he gets the cane that he has, which I won't divulge what it's to do with. But yeah, so you've got four stories. I can tell you what they are in the sense that they're on the front cover, so there's no escape. You've got the Mara, you've got Crinoids, you've got Autons, you've got Ice Warriors.
Spoiler!
So it's, well, you know, it's on the front cover. So, you know, unless you're blind, you can't read it. So it doesn't really matter, does it? Unless they've got a Braille version. Well, it's Kindle. How do you do a Braille version on Kindle?
Oh, no, there is.
You could have audio. They do actually audio speak, don't they?
There is an ebook.
Yes.
Reader type feature.
Which, they're terrible, though. I couldn't. I've listened to those, and they their sentences just run into each other, which, you know, is a terrible. And it's a nice idea. I approve of the approach. Probably needs a little extra work. I don't know.
There is actually a tablet interface, like a touch interface that does Braille.
Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, well done on them. Good on them. Well, okay, for those people who are listening to this, I am sorry, but that is what's on the cover. So, yes, it's quite a good read. It's cheap, and I think it covers that period pretty well. And the only other thing I recommend very, very quickly before we finish, The Musketeers is still running. Very mm-hmm. good, very good show. It's got its second season without Capaldi. They couldn't find a way of getting Capaldi to do Doctor Who and Musketeers, even though they said they would, but they couldn't. So he's not in the second season, but he is very good in this. I would say the season show doesn't necessarily need him, but he is really good within the show. So he will be missed. And in this last episode aired on Sunday, if you've got iPlayer in the UK, give it a watch, because Capaldi is fantastic in it. He does a great job, and so does the rest of the cast. It's just a really good. You shouldn't be watching it for Capaldi. You should be watching it for the show. But if you make the tenuous link with this, I'll say yes, he is excellent, and hopefully should encourage those naysayers who are worried about having an aged, old, decrepit old man of 50 something playing the Doctor, which is so ridiculous. Watch that to sort of become inspired by his brilliance.
We have naysayers still.
I'm beginning to wonder, because there's something we haven't mentioned here, which perhaps we should, was the Speak of the Daleks appearing maybe in the next series,
right?
Which I was wondering, and this is probably a bit of a contentious point, whether there is a little bit of fear in the Capaldi, in the sense that, as we've said before, this generation of Doctor Who fans, you know, the majority of people watching Doctor Who, we're not talking about the core fans, they've never had an old Doctor really before. And I kind of wondered whether suddenly the Dalek inclusion so early on, since they appeared in Time of the Doctor as well, was maybe a little bit of a, was that an indication of a little bit of fear, maybe? That,
I don't think it's fear. I think it's a tactic they've used repeatedly over the years.
Well, they have, but they've not used it, to my recollection, when they've used them straight after a finale where they're in. They're in the finale, and then they're suddenly in the next, from what I understand, very early on in the next series, very early on. Does that, that seems a lot of use, the Daleks, by Doctor Who's usage. And is it an indication that there's a slight discomfort that that they might need to try and draw the new, some of the new fans who might be a little concerned about an older Doctor? And I don't think we need to hide from the fact that there are people who are genuinely concerned because they've not experienced it. To them, the Doctor is a fairly young character who is attractive and bold and exciting. And now we've got an older mature actor, which I think is great. But there's going to be a certain amount of skepticism or worry from newer fans. And I wondered whether that was perhaps an indication of trying to find other ways to draw them in to watch it and get used to the fact that you can have a great, slightly maturer Doctor and don't be so scared.
Well, I certainly don't think it's anything to worry about. I think it's just, I mean, they're just doing the job as TV makers, aren't they?
I don't think it's, not saying it's something to worry about, but I think there's a lot of, there's a certain factor in Who fans that say, well, the only people who worry about this are screaming diehard girls, 13-year-old girls, and I don't think that's true. I think you've got to acknowledge the fact that this is a game changer for a generation which didn't have William Hartnell and John Pertwee.
Another game changer.
Well, it is for them, because that is, you know, you're taking an older character, a younger established character, and then getting him played by someone to them is quite old. Now, if you're in your teens and you're in your 20s, the difference between 30 and 50 is massive, even though for us guys it's not. So I think I did kind of wonder whether it's not that they're scared or they think they're not going to watch, but I'm just wondering whether it's a little bit of extra padding to bring people in regardless and let them get used to a Doctor that they're probably not sure about. And I think they will get used to him, and I think he'll be great, and I think everyone will love him. But
yeah, it probably is. I just think they should perhaps maybe just let people just get on with it and make their own minds up rather than holding their hands. It's going to be all right.
It makes you wonder if that's... Nice. I mean, I think if I was in their position, I'd do the same. If I felt, and I haven't got the statistics, but if I felt there might be a certain amount of people who'd watched Doctor Who might be turned off. And let's face it, let's face it, with, if we spin the tables and we look at the women, and look at the men, and how the Doctor Who has constantly had young girls in to make sure the dads watch, to the point where you'll never see really a Doctor Who episode without a young girl in. To that point where they're so certain that the young girl is important to keep the dads watching, you can understand where there might be a slight feeling of, well, you know, if we've now got a situation where it's the other way round, where a lot of people watch because they're quite enamoured by the cheeky young hero chap, and now we're having an older hero chap. If we'd be worried about men not watching it because we had a mature woman who was an assistant, so we've always got to have a young person, maybe that is also reflected in the fact they've got a slightly older man. Do you know, are they aware of that and looking at things to try and soften that? I mean, obviously we've got a male companion, or certainly a male lead
reoccurring character
yeah. who might be there for that same reason as well. And that makes sense, because people do watch for those sort of reasons, and you've got to accept that. And it's finding ways to sort of get them to go beyond those superficialities. And maybe that's just what I mean. Maybe that's what it is. The Daleks there is a sort of nice center character which draws everyone in, hopefully.
Yeah.
And that will help transition some of the people who might be a little worried or a little less enamored by having an older character. So
well,
I don't
let's
know.
Hope it's better than Victory of the Daleks anyway.
Oh God, I'm sure it'll be better than Victory of the Daleks. I'm sure it will, which is actually on iPlayer at the moment, and I've refused to watch. I've just watched 11th Hour again, but I couldn't bear to watch Victory of the Daleks.
Can I do my recommendation now?
Yes, please do.
Daleks!
Oh God, and we
Remembrance of the Daleks.
Oh yes, you were going to watch it.
I have watched it.
And what did you watch it like?
I watched it like really good, like.
Brilliant.
And it was as wonderful as I remember.
It is. I think it's pretty timeless. That.
You have to help me out here. Are there any other stories from? I don't think they're in that same series. Are there any in the last McCoy series that have pre-credit sequences? Or is that the only one?
That's the only one.
It's the only one. It works so well.
That is the only one.
Mm. It works so well. It makes you wonder why they didn't just go, oh, hold on a minute, we can do this every week or every serial.
Yeah. It is. I mean, the only problem with Remembrance that I can find is that once you've watched it once and you watch it twice, you watch it three times, you start seeing the slight slip-ups in the attempts to sort of play the 60s London. You'll see in the background, you know, an 80s car fly past, or, you know, there's things like that,
yeah,
which you will spot where they've not been able to keep the consistency of the period. Yeah. But beyond that...
Yes, it's definitely as good as I remember. I liked... one thing I always... always stands out for me is when Mike gets killed, and he kind of looks like a dead fish.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's got quite big eyes, and those eyes are just there staring like a dead fish. And that didn't change. So, you know, but the whole thing is just such a well-written and superbly cast piece, yeah, of Doctor Who.
And that's pretty much where McCoy, like, really picked up and became the doctor that, like, I adore, you know, like, it was that story, and somehow, like, just everything in that story just was right. And it's also one of the other sad things too. It's like that right there was the turning point. Doctor Who was becoming really damn good again, and they didn't need to cancel it, but it was too late. You know, it's a shame because that story was beautiful.
Yeah.
And you've got a lot of, sorry, Karen.
I was going to say, the problem with that series, it's a Silver Nemesis.
Yeah.
And the fact that Silver Nemesis is the official, for some god-awful reason, is the official 25th anniversary serial, whereas clearly Remembrance of the Daleks should be.
Yeah.
And the only reason Silver Nemesis is because for the anniversary that it was, silver is the color. That's why they went Cybermen and silver. You know, so it's like, you know, it really is a shame. I would have kind of reworked the airing schedule, certainly.
But at the same time, the stuff in Silver Nemesis, which is quite interesting or quite relevant. I mean, you've got the relationship between Sylvester and Aldred is really nice, and it plays on really well in Silver Nemesis. But you've got, as I've said many times before, that last fight scene, which is very indicative of new series stuff. It's the first time I remember in Doctor Who where you had a really big, real paced action scene between, you know, Ace versus the Cybermen. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's basically a worse version of what Remembrance of the Daleks is doing.
In a very, very similar plot. Yeah.
Yes, and so things in Remembrance I think is worth mentioning is things like the coffee scene where he talks to the future Fresh Prince of Bel-Air
Butler,
which I think is one of the first times in the show, I think, where you see which you see all the time now, where the Doctor is actually sort of considering the repercussions of what he does and the ramifications of who will suffer for what he does. And that was a beautifully written scene, and at the time didn't stand out as much as it probably stands out now, because that is that moment where he's mulling over his stuff is going to get people killed. Does he do it? Or, you know, does he really get, you know, does his actions justify it? It's a brilliant scene. And there's just loads of little bits like that.
Also, put me in mind of the first time I watched it back in 1988.
Yeah.
When I, like many other people, thought that the Dalek creature in Ratcliffe's yard was Davros and not the little girl.
Yes.
Very, very clever bit of subterfuge there by Ben Aronovich.
Yes, it's brilliant. And you get those lovely little bits. You get some nice little bits of mystery, the question of the other, which is... Have you ever read the book?
The novelization?
Novelization.
No, I don't think I have.
It's worth, if you see it, or you can, if it's available anywhere,
I can see it from here.
You can, then read it, because there's a lot in there. He adds a hell of a lot to the book that's not in the series.
Right.
Especially about the other and history. It goes back and it
you that starts in there, doesn't it? Right.
Yeah, Gallifrey and Omega and the other have conversations in there. It's well worth reading, the novelization. Okay. Yeah, brilliant. I love it.
So that was that. So this week I am the Curse of Fenric.
Oh, I actually watched that myself. That's one of my favourites.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's podcast, I think. Anyone got anything to add to anything that we've said today?
I will add to one thing, going back to your Doctor Who figurine collection.
Yeah.
Because I found your picture on Twitter. Okay. And going by what I know of the Emperor and double-checking myself by finding a picture on the internet, the one thing that completely stands out as wrong to me is they didn't paint any of the gray or black accents on the figure. He's all just the solid bronze. Well, that really makes it look way off.
So I wanted to mention that in case that was something. But yeah, I mean, like, there's a lot of it too. There's supposed to be a lot of gray and black accents, and they just didn't do any of it. So yeah, I wanted to put that 2 cents out there, because that's one thing that once I saw it, I was like, this thing looks wrong, and I didn't know if maybe you were thinking the same thing.
Yeah, like I said, it doesn't quite seem right, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. I think it's more than that, though. I think there's something else to it. But I can't quite get my finger on it. So that's it then. We'll be back next week. But until then, thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to last week's podcast, which was extremely well received. And we'll be back next time. Goodbye.